as I wait, heart of God.
Hey, Growth Group leaders, it's good to talk with you again. This is our week after we finished our second semester, but we do hope you'll benefit from these questions and our discussion that we're going to have about them. So we have transitioned from this nasty period of Israel's grumbling into a time in which we're highlighting the teamwork that that is present here in the wilderness. And these are some interesting passages we're going
to
look at.
Yes, I mean, Israel is beginning to learn to work together, at least I think so here. We're beginning to realize that, you know, you can't just have one person. It's not all down to Moses. There are other people that need to take part in that. And the first question really is, addresses the fact that we, as we saw last week, we had a lot of problems, but all of those problems came from within. But not all problems that we face as groups of Christians, as churches, as individuals, as families, come from within. Some of them come from without. And here we have what we've called a neighborhood bully. The Bible describes Israel, God as Israel's father, who lovingly fed Israel and taught her to walk. The Amalekites attack Israel, fledgling Israel, seeking to destroy them when they were at their most vulnerable. What does God decree against Amalek? Teach us about God. Sorry, let me start that sentence again. What does God's decree against Amalek teach us about God's heart of a father? How would you respond as a parent, emotionally and actively, if your young child was under attack?
Yeah, some of these questions are going to be tough to read with all the references thrown in there like that. But there's a few things that these references teach us. So I just want to highlight a couple things for you guys. Just who are these Amalekites? And what is kind of the long-term implications of this moment in time, this moment in history? So Israel just crossed the Red Sea, and God intentionally led them south instead of north. He didn't lead them in the way of the Philistines because he knew there's going to be battle and war there. He led them in another way in which there's a different quantity and a different nature of conflict. And this is one part of that conflict with these Amalekites. And Amalek, descendant of Esau, but Deuteronomy 25 clarifies for us the nature of their attack against Israel. Deuteronomy 25:17 says that, remember what Amalek did to you on the way as you came out of Egypt, how he attacked you on the way when you were faint and weary, cut you off by the tail. This is kind of like a sneak attack. It's not a virtuous action at all. And what we're highlighting in this question is how God feels about it. I mean, Israel is God's firstborn, it says in Exodus 4. He's teaching Israel to walk in this moment. Hosea 11 is showing us. And now here's this bully that's beating up on him.
And God says some pretty harsh things about the Amalekites. But it takes him a long time to fulfill them completely. So
yeah.
I think Israel, Amalek has adequate opportunity to actually observe that the God of Israel is the God of Israel, but clearly over a long period of history, they don't, and God eventually draws a line on them and says he's going to.
Right, and I mean that line is drawn far in the future, but He has the pen in his hand pretty early. He says right here in our passage, I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek. I will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. And he specifically tells them, you got to remember this. He says, write this as a memorial in a book and recite it in the ears of Joshua. I want you to know that this long-standing feud because you beat up my kid.
Yeah. The second question starts to address what happened when when they joined Amalek in battle, because we have this passage which talks about Moses taking the staff, you know, with the sticks in his hand, and he goes up onto the top of the hill and he lifts his hands. Now, there is a reasonable assumption that when he lifts his hands, he was praying. It doesn't tell us that. And it doesn't even tell us that God told him to go up there. So there's an awful lot in this passage which you almost find yourself, like, actually, in so many different parts in the Bible, you think, why doesn't God tell us a little bit more about this? Mm-hmm. It would help us so much if he did. But he doesn't. So clearly that there is enough for us to be able to draw the conclusions that he wants us to draw, to learn the things that he wants us to learn, and that for the Israelites to learn the things that they want, that he wants them to learn. But there are a couple of things that I think it's really important that we take care for. Israel's victory over the Amalekites was somehow mysteriously connected to Moses raising up his staff. Read this account in Exodus 17 and a similar one in Joshua 8. What might these stories teach us about prayer, identification with symbols of faith, and God's unshakable control over every battle? We've set this essentially as a discussion question, and we're really anxious that you don't think there's not one word answers to this. There's not a correct answer to this, because there are lots of things which are suggested by this passage, but they're not dictated by the passage. One of the things that that is very clear that we shouldn't draw the conclusion that somehow lifting hands in prayer is more powerful than having hands drop down in prayer. That somehow having a stick in your hands, having a staff in your hands when you're praying, is somehow more powerful than not having a staff in your hand. I mean, I think it's very clear that those are not the conclusions that we should draw.
Right, right. It simply says that whenever Moses lifted his hand, Israel prevailed. Whenever he lowered his hand, Amalek prevailed. Does that mean that when we lower our hands, our own enemies are going to prevail? No, it doesn't. This is another instance in which God worked a miracle through his servant Moses and the stick that was in his hand.
And it does give us some cause to think, not about lifting your hands up in prayer, but about praying. And about sometimes the things in life which can actually engender our faith, as opposed to being responsible for our faith. You know, there are things that, I mean, clearly the Israelites had seen Moses use this staff in all sorts of circumstances. And at this stage, who knows what they believed about the staff, but clearly when they saw the staff in some way or another, then the fact that God was at work when the staff was around.
It seems likely or possible that Israel saw the staff in Moses' hand while they were fighting with Amalek. It says, 17:9, Moses is speaking, "Tomorrow I will stand on the top of a hill with the staff of God in my hand." So presumably a visible place.
Yeah, one assumes so. And I think that certainly we discussed this at quite some length about all of the different things that conclusions we can draw and the conclusions we can't. We hope you'll have just as animated a discussion as we have about this. The second part of this passage is about a guy called Jethro. And the first part is storytelling. Is Jethro an Israelite? How was it? Then he disclaimed, "I know that the Lord is greater than all gods," in Exodus 18. What transpired between verse 1 and verse 11? And what lessons can we draw from this when telling our own stories?
So Jethro is Moses' father-in-law. And we learn here that when Moses left his home to follow God and bring Israel out of Egypt, he left his wife and his two sons with his father-in-law. And now father-in-law is back to return Moses' family to him, a little mini reunion happening here. We're told in verse 1 that Jethro has some prior knowledge of God's saving work. It says that he had heard of all that God had done for Moses and for the people of Israel. But
actually, some people think that Moses took Zipporah and the boys with him earlier, and he must have sent them back. And they think that that's where Jethro might have heard what happened. So there's multiple suggestions about how Jethro actually heard this. I mean, the stories seem to fly around in this part of at this time in ways that were remarkable, considering they had no internet, no television, no
right.
any of those things.
We learned that a couple weeks ago in the Song of the Sea in Exodus 15, where it says that the inhabitants of Philistia and Edom and Moab and Canaan, they all heard about what God had done as well. So there's definitely, this is a public statement that God is making. But more to our point in this question is the conversation between Moses and Jethro. It says in verse 8 that Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians. And then how did Jethro respond? It says that he rejoiced for all the good that the Lord had done. And then he blessed the Lord. So there's some kind of sharing of one's story, one's testimony that's happening here.
Yes, clearly. And Moses is sharing his testimony with somebody who was a priest, but not a priest of Midian.
Right.
And I know we've given you a little bit of the answer to the first part of the question there, but he's sharing, and you know, once again we see how God is concerned that people other than the Israelites should hear about him. And that we saw that God revealed his glory to the Egyptians over and over and over again so that they might be able to respond. And here again we see God revealing himself to a priest of Midian so that the Midianites get an opportunity to respond.
Yep, God's heart is for all of his creatures.
But then, of course, Jethro, being his being a good father-in-law that he is, decides he's going to give Moses some advice because he's looking at what's going on. And quite often in churches, 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people. Jethro noticed the unsustainability of this mode of ministry. What does this passage and the rest of the Bible, so we look at Exodus and Acts, teach about the principle of shared responsibility in the church? What are some of the needs of the body of Christ here at New Life, and what are you doing, or what can you begin doing to meet some of those needs?
Yeah, so there's several things that Jethro observes. He observes Moses sitting to judge the people all day long. It says from morning till evening. And there's 2 million people. They get into fight. Someone stole somebody's goat. Somebody set up their tent on someone else's little plot of land. Stuff's happening, and they're arguing and bickering. And it says that Moses made known to them the statutes of God and his laws, which is kind of cool, kind of points us forward to what the rest of the book of Acts is, Exodus is all about. But we can skip that for now and just say that Jethro saw that this is not going to work, Moses, for you to be the only guy. So his advice is that he select able, qualified, righteous people to become chiefs over the people of Israel. So now we kind of see this tribal structuring solidifying inside of the nation of Israel, which is pretty cool. But it's a picture, in part at least, of the church today, the body of Christ, made up of many different members, arms, legs, hands, ears, and things, and each has its own role. But
the interesting thing is that Jethro doesn't tell Moses to abdicate his responsibility. He tells him that he will continue with his responsibility, but he will share it with other people. And he will continue to take the leadership responsibility that God has given him, but in order to operate that, he shares it with other people.
It's kind of like the difference between the Supreme Court and all of the rest of the thousands of courts across the land.
Right.
Like, you handle the big cases, Moses, and let some of these other guys pick up the rest.
And yeah, and it's very like that. And, you know, as you say, the nation is beginning to understand that in order to be a nation, they need to have some structure.
A trellis and a vine.
A trellis and a vine.
Well, we thank you guys for listening to this podcast again. It's our pleasure to serve you, and we hope these questions are a blessing to you.
Yeah, and please do let us know if you've. It would be nice to hear if you've enjoyed it. It would if you've got any other comments about the podcast and how we can help you more. Then please let us know. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. As I wait.